Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's a bunch of us who are around the same age, so we're like in our early to mid 40s, and we've come together and we've created it's basically a variety show. So there's music, there's some improvised songs, there's sketch, and we're on our first show run at Station. We actually have our last show this week, but it's going to be an ongoing thing, and but that's one of the groups that we've been playing with a lot, because it's a combination of things, and it's kind of an interesting format, because we have a core group of three of us, but then the rest of the people can switch out at shows, and so we don't necessarily have a solid cast every single time. So, yeah. But it's fun. But yeah, and then all of the social media is just the 80s kids comedy. But it's because we all grew up in the 80s, either, middle school, high school, it was all 80s.
Funny. Interesting. Yeah, I guess I grew up in the 80s, but I always had this weird aversion to it. Like, I didn't like all the, I don't know, Euro-ish music, I guess. I really wasn't into it. I was frightened of Boy George. But not in a insensitive to trans or whatever is happening with him. Is I just didn't like the vibe he was giving off, and I was no thank you. And when I was a kid, I really wanted to feel like the people that I guess I still kind of feel this way, but less so because now I'm an adult, but I wanted to be friends with the people that I was excited to listen to or watch on TV.
Yeah, I get that. I have really vivid memories of being in love with Duran Duran because I would spend weekends with my cousin Barrett. And it was a shared thing that we did. We would listen to music and dance. And at my grandparents' house, we had a what we called the Metallic Building, which was just basically this big building where we put all Duran Duran, Wham, whatever posters up. And we would just go out, and I would pretend that I was married to Simon Le Bon. She'd pretend that she was married to John Taylor. And we assigned Roger Taylor, Andy Taylor, and Nick Rhodes to the other three girls in the family. And to this day, my sister is still convinced that she was in love with Nick Rhodes, even though we assigned him to her. So I get it, but I have direct memories of hanging out with a person because of our connection over the music. So yeah, that makes total sense to me.
Oh, man. So the first thing I wanted to ask you about was, the first time when you were a kid, and your Duran Duran story has really alerted me to the fact that we have similar, childhood experiences of performing, pretending to be things, when did you know when you were a little kid that you wanted to perform?
Oh, gosh. I think... I am one of those people that I have a terrible time actually remembering things from growing up, but there are a couple of moments that I do remember.
I remember nothing, don't worry about it.
Okay, good.
That makes six me feel stories a little better, yeah. That I keep retelling because that's my childhood. Yeah, and realistically, let's be honest, we're all making it up. We're all faking stories. Every time we take a new storytelling workshop, we're just reforming the memories of our childhood in our head. Absolutely. I decided I had a good childhood early on, and that was it. I wasn't going to let my brain accept another way.
Yeah, I like it. So I do remember at my grandmother's house, there was a drawer, a big drawer that was underneath the oven, And, like, she had all of these dress-up clothes for us. So it was, like, these, like, 1970s spaghetti strap dresses with these crazy, like, prints on them. And my cousin Barrett and I would, like, we would dress up in those. And I don't even remember what all we would pretend to do. But, like, you know, I remember that at one point we had our own newspaper that we were writing called the Peppermint Press. And, you know, like I remember so much of, what I did with my cousin Barrett as like, we would just play and it was all imagination. And you know, like, you know, being married to Simon Le Bon and, you know, apparently I was having an affair with George Michael, which I don't even know that I knew what that was at the time. Yeah, I don't think I really knew what it was other than the fact that I was just like, oh, this is the thing that people do, you know. And but yeah, like we were constantly like dressing up and pretending to be somebody else. Like we would, you know, I remember that we made up a story about Lisa Dolby being kidnapped because we're like, oh yeah, Dolby sound, that's on our 8-track or on our cassette player. So that must mean that, whoever Dolby has a daughter, her name's Lisa. So anyway, yeah. So, but I just like, I remember those in such specific detail. And I've always loved to sing. I think that's just kind of a thing in our family. We would, anytime we would take a road trip, we would sing together and harmonize. And that's from like my grandmother, my aunt, my mom, my sisters, like my cousin, Krisha, who has just one of the most beautiful voices. And, you know, like that was just the thing. And even we still do that today when we get together for family gatherings. But I think the first time I really remember wanting to perform was my fifth grade play, which was called Let George Do It. And it was about
Let George Washington.
Yep, Let George Do It. And so it was about
it's
George
a
Washington.
Terrible title. Okay.
Yeah, I know, right? And so I remember going through the audition process, and our two music teachers were like, could we put a wig on her and cast her as George? And so they essentially ended up combining a couple of parts and giving me more parts.
You said, let George do it.
And so, yeah, so we just let George do it. So I ended up being Molly Pitcher, and I don't remember what else, but it's weird. As terrible as my memory is, I still remember what my singing lines were as Molly Pitcher. So it's very strange. So.
That's so funny. Let George do it.
Yeah, it's one of the best plays ever, obviously, out of Ben Bowen Elementary School in Huffman, Texas.
Solid. Absolutely. Why not? I dig it. I'm just like before you said it was about George Washington, like with George Washington, it's like, great. We're just making stuff up now. It's fine. Especially your kids. Like, whatever. Like, those guys were gross. If we met those guys today, they would be shunned from society. Like,
but
don't lie to yourself.
In that play, he was first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen. In that specific play.
In that specific play. See, the message was.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's weird. It's weird when those memories come back, and I'm like, oh, I haven't thought about that in years. Oh, but I still remember everything.
Yeah, I don't have that vivid. Like people say that where they're like, oh, now I remember all the details. I'm still telling you the fake story. Sometimes I make it better.
I'm usually not that person. Yeah.
You can't
help it. If it's music related, it sticks in my brain. If it's personal memory related, I'll lose it. It's very, very strange. But
I wish I was a journaler.
I wish I could do that. I never have. I've never had the patience to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
So I even have one in my backpack right now that I haven't even opened.
I mean, I use thousands and thousands of journals to write down comedy ideas and notes when I'm teaching, but like,
sure.
I don't realistically ever need them again. Nothing. I'm leaving nothing for my biographer is what I'm saying. When they come in and they go through the multiple boxes of my old journals that are filled with dumb jokes.
Right.
And they want to make the documentary.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not going to go well.
But there's nothing about you here. It's just about other people who have been in your classes.
Oh, that's so deep. That's like extra deep right there.
Yeah. Right.
Tell me about the other music in your life. Like, did you do, you know, like choir, or did you do any singing in an extracurricular way? Like, were you going to music camp or anything like that?
No. See, that's the weird thing. Despite the fact that I absolutely loved it growing up, I didn't do anything with it. Like, whenever I got into middle school, I attempted to join the band. I tried to play alto sax for 2 years and failed miserably. And when I got into high school, I was in drill team for 3 years and then discovered that that wasn't where I enjoyed things. So I jumped into the theater department. But I never focused on music other than just, you know, singing with family. So I have, I wish I had music training, you know, like I so incredibly massively respect people who do have that. And it just wasn't something that I ever did. Like, I, you know, took gymnastics until sixth grade and, you know, that was about the extent of it. But, you know, I, probably about 9 years ago, I kind of, like, I think about whenever I moved back to Houston from Austin, I was like, okay, I need to shake up my life. I got to do something that scares me. So, a friend of mine named Monica was like, well, hey, we go do karaoke over here. Why don't you come hang out with us? And, you know, meanwhile, I'm terrified because I sing with the radio, I sing with sisters, I sing with family, but I've never, like, sung in front of anybody else besides that. And, so go in there, and I remember just like shaking the first time that I went up there. And I think that I did Stay by Sugarland. I was like, way to jump out there with a really hard song, Jess. Good job. But like, it felt so good in that moment. I'm like, no, I know every word. I don't even need the lyrics. That I just, I have become addicted to karaoke. And so, typically speaking, we have a group of people that goes at least once, if not twice a week. And
really?
Yeah, we have our happy group of karaoke Americans.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So, and,
cool.
You know, I have a list of probably close to 500 songs that are possible songs that I can do, and I've done about half of the songs on the list. So, yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that are you doing the musical improv that's in that show you were talking about, or are you doing musical improv? Because musical improv
I am.
Singing.
Oh, it's the best. Well, first of all, kind of a nod back to you, I think Water Park was the first group that I ever saw do musical improv. You know, back in the day, right?
I miss it.
Y'all had the best harmonies.
The I really
best.
Miss
like,
it.
I, because I think y'all came out to our festival, our first Trill Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
The harmonies were just so beautiful. And, like, that was kind of where I fell in love with it and then just kind of started listening. But I've been, since I've been doing, station theater full time, I've had kind of the flexibility of schedule to be able to drive into Austin to take the musical improv classes at Merlin Works. So I've been studying with Sarah Marie Curry and our group out there, which we refer to ourselves as Dippin' Dots and Tang Bang. We're the first, right? It's pretty fun. But we're the first group to make it into a 601. And with the exception of like one or two people, our group has stayed together from level one all the way through level six. And it's been about a year and a half, maybe a little bit less, that I've been driving up there. So I just recently turned 95,000 miles on my car. Woohoo! But it's been worth it, because it's been, like, to go back and have the experience of being a student whenever I've been teaching for about 5 years, I feel like I'm a completely different student than I was the first time.
I know. I'm looking forward to going back and being a student again. I'm in a transition period, like, because of the baby and because of all the drama.
Mm-hmm.
And, and so, but my thing is, as soon as and I'm not, like, just going to wait till the child goes to, like, school, because that's a long time. But that being said, a year and a half was super fast. So, really, maybe it'll be 5 years, and I'll be like, wait, what?
Where'd the time go?
But my hope is I'm setting up a daycare thing so I can go take some classes. Like, awesome. I found a daycare where, you know, I can only drop them off occasionally when I need help. And they have evening stuff. And it's like, okay, listen, I need evening because
awesome.
I need to take a class. And my husband is away for work. But I am really looking forward to being a student again. It's such an interesting thing. Tell me how it was different for you. Tell me the way that you're processing it in this new way.
Well, when I first started, and like the way that I even got into improv was so different than I think some people, because I, like, I've been in the tourism industry for as long as I can remember. Like, even whenever I was like in jobs, whenever I was going to the University of Texas, I was doing campus tours, and, you know, I worked for hotel companies and stuff like that. And,
oh yeah, I did hotels for years. I love hotels.
Yeah, they're wonderful. It's a great, like, flexible job. And,
yeah, and the dirtiest, raunchiest, worst places ever. It's great. It's great. Both of those things are true.
Luckily, I was working for hotel reservations, so I was just dealing with people on the phone.
Okay.
But yeah. So it was a little bit of a different experience for me. But then whenever I got my real job, I worked for what's now Visit Austin. So it was the Austin Convention and Visitors Bureau, and I was there for about 7 years. And my job was to get people to bring their group tours to Austin, stay a few nights, and then, you know, go back to where they came from. So it's basically bringing money from outside the community in, you know. And but I specifically worked with group tours, so it was either senior group tours, or Austin started working with a lot more student tours, I think, at that point. And then in 2004, I think I started there in 97. And then in 2004, I moved over and started with the state of Texas doing the same thing. So the U.S. and Canada market was my market. And so I would travel to Canada and try to get Canadians to come visit and, like, that kind of thing. And so when I moved back to
you're far away. Like, so funny that you had such an unusual market. They're like, hey, okay,
well,
so there's a whole country, right? But it's super far away. And the weather is, like, the opposite of ours. Convince them to come.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, though, like, Canada is one of the top origins for the state of Texas, especially during the winter. There's a lot of winter Texans that come down from, like, the north northern states and from Canada, and they'll come stay the winter. Go hang out in South Padre during the winter, and you will meet a ton of people from Canada. It's super interesting. Mexico is another major market for Texas, because it was pretty easy for people to get over here. You know, of course, at the time. Hopefully things don't change. Hopefully it stays the same. The UK, Germany, and so we would have different representation in different markets trying to get people to come visit. And ultimately, it's all about generating sales tax and hotel tax revenue that funds the state of Texas, or that funds the city, you know? And so, that's why you spend the money to do that. And for every I'm going to throw some facts at you. For every dollar you spend in promotion, you get $7 in return in tourism. At least that's like that's the most recent I've heard, and that's from several years ago, so it may be different. But yeah, like everyone would be paying a ton more in like property taxes if it weren't for tourism. So
sure.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, keep Austin weird for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
I always think it's so funny when people complain about that stuff. I'm like, how did you get here? Someone told you it was cool. That's what happens, man. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, for me, it was a boyfriend that told me he didn't think I could make it at UT, but it's okay.
Man, well, there's always somebody challenging you to do something. You couldn't leave Texas, man.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happened with getting me into improv is when I moved here, I was working for Landry's Restaurants for their national office, and I met Diana Delaney with Comedy Sports at a tourism event with the Houston Convention and Visitors Bureau. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I've done a little bit of improv in college, and it was a lot of fun. I was like, I've done the theater thing, but I don't really want to memorize scripts anymore. And she's like, you need to audition for Comedy Sports. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm scared. And, like, she was like, great, then you need to take classes at Comedy Sports. And so I did, went through that first, went through level one. Right as we finished level one, my mom was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so with that particular class, I was like, hey, I'm going to step back. I'm going to help my mom. Y'all have a really fantastic class. So about, you know, 2-3 months into mom's treatment, I was like, I miss this so much. I have to go back. And so in my brain, I was like, it seems like that connection is a big part of it. So I'm going to retake level one. Happened to meet 4 people there who are some of my favorite people in the entire world. And those 4 people decided that they wanted to take classes with what was then Rogue Improv. And so that's how I started in long form. And and then, you know, we had the whole evolution through New Movement Houston into Station Theater. And that's kind of how I ended up where I am. And I went full time with the theater in 2 years ago. It'll be almost 3 years in January. And my story of how I did that is also related to music too.
Love it.
It's so weird.
Yeah. I feel like there was another question inside the improv question, but now I can't.
Sure.
Remember what the question was. So tell me this new story.
So
my audience is used to this. I follow down every weird rabbit hole. I ask questions. Yeah, yeah. Nobody answers them. It's fine.
Well, and that's why I was trying to get back to how I got into it in the first place, which was through Diana Delaney. So I was working, I started the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Sugar Land, which is a little suburb just outside of Houston. That's, you know, one of the, like I was there for, I think it's like 5 years. And I am an avid Duran Duran fan because of the connection that my cousin and I had growing up.
Really?
And so, yeah. Oh, it's, you'll understand here in a second. So, I blame my sister for this, but it's not exactly true. This last time, she always wants me to go see New Kids on the Block with her. New Kids on the Block was her band. Duran Duran is mine. So the last time, which was about 2 years ago that they came through town, she was like, hey, let's go. And I'm like, I can't. If I go see New Kids on the Block one more time, I will have seen them more times than I've seen Duran Duran, and that can't happen. So that started me on this weird mission that somehow I ended up seeing 5 Duran Duran shows in 1 year. And one of them, which was the one that started it all, we found out that they were playing at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Denver, Colorado, or outside of Denver. And my friends Anna and Betty and my sister Mandy and I all went. And while we're there, like, it's just like this beautiful night, you know, like we're up on the 35th row that puts us right above the edge of the stage so we can see all of the lights of the city twinkling in the distance, and there's not a cloud in the sky, so you can see every single star that's out there. Like, my favorite band is on stage. I can see Simon Le Bon right in front of me. And then suddenly the song Reach Up for the Sunrise comes on. And it's not one that I've never hated it, but I've also never really paid attention to it. But I was kind of miserable in my job at the time. And for some reason, this lyric just like floated out at me at this show. And the lyric was, only change will bring you out of the darkness. In this moment, everything is born again. And Ooh. So like I sit there and suddenly like, and it's an upbeat song. Suddenly I just start crying in the middle of the concert. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Because like I knew that I wanted to do this, but I was like really scared because, you know, I got a really good job with the great benefits and, you know, it's a city job, it's very secure and all of that. And I'm like, but it's not what I love. It's not what I want to do. Well, then the very next song that's up is Ordinary World. And the lyric that stood out to me was, and as I try to make my way through the ordinary world, I will learn to survive. So it kind of felt like in that one moment, the universe was communicating with me through Duran Duran. Mm-hmm. And it was saying, hey, you know how to get out of this and you're going to be okay. And so got back from that vacation. We had one of our meetings and, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, okay. It actually wasn't the next day. That's not true. It was about a month later because I wrote a resignation letter and I couldn't do it. And then finally one day we're in this meeting and I'm like, this is, I have to. And so like, I gave them like 3 months notice because, you know, it was, the transition was just going to take a while, but yeah. So yeah, Duran Duran is when I quit my job in Sugar Land. So.
Well, certainly helped you see the light in that moment.
Yeah.
It's funny how we can see that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, not to sound too like, oh my God, the universe, bleh. But like, I'm convinced that I notice things when they hit me through music.
Sure.
Because, and this has happened a couple of times related to my dad too, because, we had moved our mom and dad in with us last year, right before Hurricane Harvey, and our dad passed when he got sick with pneumonia on April 1st of this year. And, I've had two different instances where I've either done something where a song that I associate with him came on and it felt like, hey, I'm watching you. I'm proud of you for doing that. Or like something where he was like, hey, yeah, I'm here. And so it's just like, it's very, very strange how that works.
Yeah.
You know,
music is a great way of connecting. It's a really excellent way of unifying the idea of emotions, you know? Because not only do you have specific songs, like, with each other, but, like, there are songs that I really like because the tone of them evokes something to me, but the words, I don't know what that person's talking about. Like, there's a few... I have a problem with Fleetwood Mac, and it's just, I don't know what it is, but some of the songs I love and some of the songs I just don't like at all. And usually the music is good. It's just like the words, like I'll be like, what's this? Why? Stop.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. Why? I don't know why.
Yeah. I get it.
But the music, you get it. You know, the music evokes what you want it to have, you know? And then, it's that visceral remembrance when you hear an old song or something. You have a few of those, good and bad.
Yeah. I actually, there are a couple of songs that I used to play so much in my first apartment in Austin. This was my first time living away from home or anything, and like the first time in my own place. But if I hear them, I can actually smell my first apartment.
Mm-hmm. Smell is a good, is a strong thing too. If you ever have, like, honestly, I know this sounds crazy, but the next time you have like a big new thing, like it's like we're starting this thing and you want to milestone it, literally buy yourself, like go to like Body Shop or whatever and get one of those like new things of perfume and just use it until it runs out. And then you don't have to buy it again. You don't have to. Occasionally you might, but you don't have to, because now forever and ever that smell will represent that time in your life. I've done that with certain things, like, like where there's like a, and I sometimes I keep them and they're like, my husband's like, this is empty. And I'm like, no, no, no. That's my little memory.
It's not. It's full of memory.
I let you keep much electronic shit.
Yeah, well, I think that may be why, to this day, like, I still love Obsession for Men, because it, like, and it's, you know, it's a very dated scent, you know, it's not something that people still wear, but anytime
it reminds me of
it,
Friends.
I find, it reminds me of my first boyfriend, because that's what he used to wear, and so, but it's one of those things where it's such a powerful scent that like people have used it against me, and they'll be like, oh, I know what happens to you whenever you smell that. Here, let's put it on your cousin and see what happens. And I'm like, nope, that's
gross.
Not the same.
Gross.
Yeah.
Why? So why do people always do that?
They think they're clever. They're not nearly as clever as they think they are.
Yeah, well, ain't that the truth? So interesting the way music is. So I realized what I had originally asked you, and it does pertain to what we're talking about with reference to music, which is you had said that you, since taking the classes at Merlin Works, you had had a new experience as a new student. That the way that you took in being a student with this second time around was different, and I wanted to know if there was a way for you to articulate them.
So the first time that I took classes, I was the oldest in the class by about 13 years. Everyone else was like 23 to 25. Actually, it's not like 10 years maybe. But I was like, I was starting in my, I think, mid-30s. And so
it
was one of those things where, and so like I was very unsure about where I stood. I wasn't sure how I fit in. I was really nervous about taking classes. And so, and it wasn't anything that anybody else did. Everybody in my class was amazing. It's just that I wasn't confident in what I was doing. And while I would listen, like I would still, I felt myself holding back because I was so worried about not doing it right or embarrassing myself or, you know, just fucking it up somehow, you know? And so whenever I started taking classes, and Michael Joplin was our first instructor and Ryan Spector was our first accompanist. And, you know, I had missed the first class because I was sick. I was so sick. And I just remember that Joe Chauvin and I had both missed that first class. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to waste this. So I get in there in the second one. He was like, okay, this is what we did last week. And now we're going to do this. Does anybody remember what we did last week? And I'm like, I don't remember, but I'm going to do it. And so Joe and I both jumped up to do it first. And we hadn't even done what had been done last week. And so like, it was just, I started, rather than holding myself back, pushing myself a lot harder and taking bigger chances. And, and it was just, it was really, really fun to allow that to happen or to be in that moment. And then like I started, I also feel like it made me a different instructor because I started, you know, I was like, hey, here are things that I'm dealing with right now. And you're probably feeling a lot of the same things because these are, I teach most of our level one classes because I love that moment in a level one class where they go from I'm scared, I don't know what I'm doing, to oh my God, this is really great. And I can actually allow myself to be in that moment. And you can see when that happens in someone's eyes. Mm-hmm. And like, I love being there for that moment and like seeing how that, seeing that initial growth and then coming back around. And sometimes I teach our level five classes too, and seeing that, that mm-hmm. growth from like one, from day one to like day to the last day of class is just, is incredible. You know?
Yeah. I do love a level one.
Right.
I miss my level ones. I haven't taught a yeah. level one in a while.
Yeah. It's
they're
pretty,
so nice.
Pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. It says, sweet and naive as any adult can be.
Yes.
And I kind of wish we were all sweet and naive all the time. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like my ideal people in the world are like Kenneth from 30 Rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, I'm like, it's fine. You'll be all right.
Yeah. Like, well, and it's because you're getting to experience things together for the first time. So everyone's still on that same kind of, I mean, it is naive because you're like, no one really knows exactly what it is going in there. And so, you know, it's very vulnerable to take a class like that for the first time. And I think it's incredible.
Yeah. I like being the anchor in that situation. Like,
mm-hmm.
don't worry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Jump out.
Yeah.
I got you. I'm holding the rope.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. You're not going to fail. You're not going to break improv.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think dispelling the whole notion that there is even a wrong, like, it's like there's wrong moves, but there's not like wrong improv. Like, you're like, okay.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
You're like, okay, well, like, the move that you made was obtuse enough that no one knew what you meant. So that's why it's tough. Not that it's
yeah.
the wrong move ever. Maybe you make that move
exactly.
and you're a little clearer. You know, stuff like that. You know, like, it's not, it's like, it's never wrong unless you're being a dick.
Yeah.
Unless you're being
yeah,
a jerk.
I mean,
like, direct
in which
to their face.
Choice.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. There's something to be said for being beholden to the one rule of you have to deal with it.
Yep.
You know, like in the way where it's like you, you know, like don't edit yourself. Like it's like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you could, but like how,
stick with it.
How brave is that? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's, like, I think that is also part of the reason why mono scenes scare people, you know, because they're like, oh, I have to be the same character for a full show, and, like, I can't vary from that. I mean, but if you really lean into it, like, you can find so much more there. Like, I kind of, like, I'm a fan of mono scenes. I think they're a lot of fun.
Well, sure, if you'd like to actually develop character and, like,
yeah.
figure out what a person is, sure, it's a great thing. But if you like improv for the fast-moving, I can
mm-hmm.
forget it in 30 seconds, you know, wild antics, then, you know,
yeah.
honestly, not
yeah.
for you.
And neither of them are wrong. It's just how you play.
I actually think it's different points. Like you're talking about how when you first were in your original class, you started
mm-hmm.
and you had all these, you know, apprehensions. And then when you took the second class, this other class, to get back into it, you were braver because you had
mm-hmm.
had the experience and knew that you would get more out of it by being brave. But that's just because
yeah.
you had the experience, right? Like,
sure.
It's like, it's almost like regular kids in college. Like, my husband's
yes.
one of these people who's like, you know, if he doesn't want to go to college, he doesn't have to go to college. And I was like, he can do whatever he wants. I really am not, I'm not trying to force my 1-year-old child into anything at this point. But he's like, but I was like, but if he wants to go to college, like, we'll help him figure that out. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, but it's just not necessary for life. And I go, well, it's necessary for some life. Not necessary for your life, but necessary for some people's lives. So
yeah,
also,
sure.
I kind of consider it personally as like practice adulthood. Like, that's how I got to Texas. I came to college. Mm-hmm. I'm from Boston. My parents were like, okay, I guess we will let you move to Dallas, Texas.
Nice. That's a big move.
Yeah, it was big. But I was one of those kids that really was not going to take no for an answer. And I got into the school and got, like, scholarships or whatever, so they weren't like, hey, it's really expensive. Like, they were like, well, okay.
Yeah.
But it was super weird to move super far away.
Yeah, I stayed at home for the first year, 2 years, I think, and did the community college thing, even though, like, I, you know, probably could have gone somewhere else. I wasn't really ready to leave. I grew up in Huffman, Texas, and my graduating class was 117. And I, was number 8 out of 117. And so I would have been fine going just about anywhere, but I didn't feel emotionally ready to move on yet. And so, I hung back and took classes. And, I think that was the right move for me because I ended up, I started doing forensics at what was then North Harris County Community College, and it's now Lone Star College. And so I did the prose and poetry interpretation, duet acting. That's where we did the improv kind of thing. And then I also ended up taking a class there called World Mythology that I feel like that changed my view on the entire world. And I went from having a small town mentality to realizing that we have a lot more connecting us than I think we realize. And if people would really just kind of step back and take a look at where everybody comes from, that we would have a lot fewer issues in the world. But yeah, like that world mythology class blew my mind. And I've,
that's the best part about college classes. Those are the kind of college classes you're looking for, man. These kids, we are all young. We're trying to figure out what we want to do in the world. And that's why, it's great if you want to get a job straight away, but maybe take a world mythology class. Open your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and I remember a disagreement that I had with my grandfather where, he pulled me aside and he's like, I'm really concerned that you don't go to church. And he was like, I just don't want you to end up where you don't deserve to be. And he was like, I really want you to do it. And I just kind of told him, I said, it's really arrogant. I said, I don't know what I believe yet. I believe that there is something out there that's greater than us. And I said, but I also think that it's very arrogant to think that any one religion / mythology is any more right than any other one in the world. And I'm like, I'm sorry that that's not what you believe. I'm like, but I have to do this for me. And that was hard.
The other day, this is totally connected, I promise. The other day, my husband's podcast had a guy from the Joseph Campbell Foundation on it, and they were chatting about philosophy and stuff. And previous to that, when he was doing research, we watched this, interview series with Joseph Campbell, and there's this conversation he's having where he's just,
Yeah, is it the one with Bill Moyers?
Yeah. Yeah, he's
I know exactly the one you're talking about,
All the religions, you'll notice how they're similar and, people are just trying to make them real. They're metaphors. Check out the metaphor. There's plenty of metaphor there. He didn't actually full body lift up into heaven. It's a metaphor, guys. And the guy, even in the response, because an interviewer should just be like, yeah, whatever you want to say, share it with me. But the guy's like, what? Are you sure? It's like, what do you mean are you sure? No, who's sure? Number one.
But number two, we weren't there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But interesting idea of how it's all connected and just stories. These are stories people told.
Well, and he's got it. Joseph Campbell actually has a book called Comparative Mythology. If I'm remembering the right one, I may not be. Where it actually kind of goes into how there are multiple cultures that have very similar creation stories. There are multiple cultures that have great flood stories. And if you are to kind of trace it back in a timeline, they all occurred around the same time. And so, like, it's absolutely, it's fascinating to me. And I've kind of dropped off on my my interest in it, although I still avidly collect mythology books. I don't make the time to read them as much anymore. But yeah, like I especially love, you know, Joseph Campbell because of his incorporation of some of what he considers the modern myths, like Star Wars.
Right.
You know, and he's in,
I was
and,
just about to
like,
say,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, even if you look at, here's my other nerd showing, even if you look at Buffy the Vampire Slayer, there are those similar type of myths, you know, and like it's got this whole mythology surrounding the show, and that's why there are so many people that are so connected to it.
I just watched the movie Galaxy Quest the other day. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
I haven't, no.
Well, in that movie, I'm not spoiling anything. I tried to explain this to somebody the other day, and they were like, you just told me the whole movie. And I was like, I really didn't. But the premise of the movie is that there is a, like, Star Trek-like television show. And mm-hmm. and the television show went on for multiple years, right? And, you know, the radio waves went off into space and some aliens received them and thought that they were training videos and, like, totally trained.
Gosh.
And then they, when something bad happens to them, they come to Earth to find these people to ask them for help. And, you know, hijinks ensue. So I told that to somebody and they were like, you just told me the whole movie. And I was like, I did not. I told you like the first 30 seconds of the movie. The rest of the movie, hijinks ensue, that's the movie. Right?
Yeah.
But anyway, it's funny because they interpreted the stories the way they wanted. They interpreted the stories as true as opposed to seeing it as a story somebody told. I actually really think it's important. And I think of this as like a modern day storyteller that, even though I'm not, like, I don't know, hip to all the different kinds of art, you know, I don't listen to all different kinds of music, I don't watch every single thing, I haven't seen Hamilton, sorry everybody, but, like, the idea is that...
I haven't either, but I have listened to the soundtrack multiple times.
But there's certain stories that we find ourselves to see that are made now. And I think it's important for us to see what kind of stories come out and what that means about where we're at and stuff like that. Like, for instance, right now we have Marvel Insanity, right? Marvel has been making superhero movies for a while now, right? Well, they really dug in and started making more of those savior movies right after 9/11. When we needed a savior, the stories came in and gave us one. I mean, hell, Superman and the like were invented right around wartime. You know what I mean? Like, there were stories to say, someone can save you. You know what I mean? And so whenever a new style comes out, or whenever I see, like, oh, there's three or four that are kind of like this, you know, I'll try to keep an eye out and, like, I'll be like, this is so fun because this time is being captured by this style of storytelling.
Yeah.
They're showing the way we're looking at the world through the way they're telling the stories in the moment. Which is also really interesting when you watch movies because it takes like years.
I'm sorry, I missed that last part that you said.
I'm sorry. It's also interesting with movies because they take multiple years to get out. So the story and how it connects to the world when it comes out, it's a fascinating thing that, like, doesn't, like, the writer could not intend it.
Interesting.
Sorry. You were saying.
In the 401 and 501 class that we did at Merlin Works, what we did is we started off with a survey of Broadway form. So that went from Gilbert and Sullivan to Rodgers and Hammerstein to Sondheim, and then it just kind of progressed forward. And, like, despite the fact that I could not find anything in me that enjoyed Gilbert and Sullivan. I tried so hard. I went to friends who are fans, and I'm like, please give me something I might like, and I just didn't. It never related to me. But one of the things that was so incredibly interesting about that class is that all of the styles of musicals at any given time reflect the culture of that time. And so if you're looking at Hamilton right now, that reflects what is going on in our current culture. If you're looking at About Evan Hansen, or if you're looking at Dear Evan Hansen, sorry, I couldn't come up with the word, Fun Home, those are reflections of what is happening in our current society. And so it's fascinating when you go back and you look at stuff like that and how does that translate? Now, of course, you'll have things like your Phantom of the Opera and Les Mis, but even still, maybe there's something that's going on at that given time that, reflects the current culture. And I'm regurgitating a lot of this stuff. I haven't gone back to research it or anything, but it was really fascinating. And that was one of my favorite parts of that class. Or that set of classes was the learning those or learning the styles of the specific forms of given times.
It is interesting though, the ones that you talk about that were famous when they're writing the stuff and famous throughout, you know what I mean? That affects the way that a person writes their music, right? Because they're comfortable and what they have to communicate is not always what they have to communicate maybe, but what their boss tells them to communicate, right? And the ones that are really like the movies or the albums that go viral where it was unexpected or nobody really was sure that was going to happen and then boom, it really did. It's that kind of stuff that is what you want to look out for when it comes to seeing pop culture that will be, that is either affected or is affecting the world around it. Mm-hmm. It's super interesting. I think there's a lot of new satire pieces coming out now. There's a lot more when it comes to that. You know, satirical style stuff is, it's coming out in spades. So many S's.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean it.
Definitely.
I didn't even mean it. Whoa. So as far as the experience that you've had doing the musical improv and you are weaving that into shows at your theater, how has the rest of it been? The business part of running a theater, what's that like? I mean,
so different than I expected. We were running it while we were still working our full-time jobs. And so we're cool. This is just something that we're doing for fun. We don't have to make money doing it. But now we're reaching the point where, we want to give more opportunities to performers. We're going to have to probably look for a new space soon. Because we're kind of outgrowing this because our classes are really solid right now. But just the day-to-day stuff that you just don't think about, someone has to remember to clean the toilet. Someone has to remember to pay the bills to keep the lights on and keep things moving. And then just trying to get information out and getting people into shows, especially in we're pretty lucky that, there are only a few improv theaters in Houston. But on the opposite side of that, improv is still a relatively kind of unknown entertainment in Houston. And so, we're trying to build an audience. And, luckily, one of the things that we've done is we work really closely with our friends at Comedy Sports here in Houston. And, we've done some things where we're hey, you know, we've got kind of this reciprocal agreement where our students get in half price to their shows and vice versa. You know, we both know each other's curriculum enough to where we're like, hey, you know, if you make it through level four of station, then you can start at level two of comedy sports or vice versa, because that's, you know, that's the improv basics in that level one. So those are similar. It's just the execution varies as you get into the higher levels. And so, you know, we like to work very closely with them, and, you know, they've been great partners. Like they'll, whenever we host the college improv tournament, they'll come in and help us with that. Or, you know, we actually now, cause they're right now, they're the ones that are doing, any musical shows. One of the things we've been talking about are the directors from each theater, like doing a short run of shows where it's a musical with, you know, the combination of the four of us. And, then, what was the other thing I was going to say? Side note, I've been coaching a team at station, and we are actually going to have our first musical troupe that starts in November. It'll be our Space Cat Labs, which is our every 2 months we rotate out the headliner for our Thursday show, and it's a brand new or a different form. We do different types of forms in a brand new cast every 2 months, but this particular cast we've been rehearsing since, I can't remember if it's June or July, but we've been rehearsing a musical. And so they have the run of shows in November and December. And so, yeah.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.